here's the meaning of life.
Thank you, Brigitte.
Well, it's nothing very special. Try and be nice to people, avoid eating fat, read a good book every now and then, get some walking in, and try and live together in peace and harmony with people of all creeds and nations. And finally, here are some completely gratuitous pictures of penises to annoy the censors and to hopefully spark some sort of controversy, which it seems the only way these days to get the jaded, video-sated public off their fucking asses and back in the sodding cinema. Family entertainment? Bollocks. What they want is filth. People doing things to each other with chainsaws, joint Tupperware parties. Babysitters being stabbed with knitting needles by gay presidential candidates. Vigilante groups strangling chickens. Armed bands of theatre critics exterminating mutant goats. Where's the fun in pictures? Oh, well, there we are. Here's the theme music.
American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Tuesday, September 27th, 2005. And this would be Newsreel, the walk global subreddit for core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. RAND Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening, you are too. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal. And you can get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. Once you're there, you'll be able to check out any of my random thoughts and manic scribblings during the day, as well as links to all the news stories that I cover. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on RAND Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Pure Rock Radio, Osprey Radio.info, Extreme Radio Tampa, and SRN1. And you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way that you see fit. You can do anything you want with it, hand it out to people, just like everything else we do at RAND Media, except you can't make money with it, because everybody knows money is evil. Let's cut all the bullocks and go straight into the news today. I've got some wicked clown news sent right off the top in by No Delete, which is very, very cool. Now, what is not cool is that the wicked clowns are at it again. On the heels of Paris Hilton's sexually supercharged burger campaign for Hardee's and Carl Jr.'s fast food giant. Oh, pardon me, for Hardee's and Carl's Jr. Fast food giant McDonald's is serving up a new generation of Ronald McDonald. And it's not a clown, it's not even a Ronald for that matter. The McMarketing campaign in Japan replaces the traditional baggy pants male clown with a sexy bikini-clad woman. This is, and but here's the best part, she still looks like, they're trying to keep the colors the same. In Japanese TV commercials, notes British Guardian's newspaper, the foxy female version with shoulder-length straight auburn hair in place of Ronald's frizzy mop smolders at the camera in a flowing yellow dress and later a red and white striped bikini with thigh-high leggings and red high heels. Now, the thing is that she doesn't really have auburn hair. She has Ronald McDonald red hair, so it's like a sexy Ronald McDonald. That's what they're doing there. The customers are calling her the female Ronald, but that's not our intention, says campaign creator Heidi Kazu Sato, known by his nickname Kazu. Okay, through a translator, he said, "We devised a costume that took the red and white stripes and yellow, which were recognized, and converted them into a stylish dress." Yeah, very stylish. "We were assuming that even if we didn't include McDonald's logo, even if the model was a beautiful Caucasian, those colors and mnemonic design would wake people's association with McDonald's." So this is all about mindshare. "The important point is we didn't change Ronald himself. We played around with his costume." Oh, I see. So the clown's still there. The London Times reporter reports a Japanese campaign is bringing customers back to the Golden Arches, as well as winning praise from design and fashion experts. Okay, anybody can look at this and say that you're dressing this woman as a clown and the design and fashion experts think this is a good thing? No, of course not. This is ridiculous. This is totally, totally insane. I can't believe that this is happening here. But the gender change is too radical for a global audience, so the traditional clown is not being retired. Oh, I see. Illinois-based McDonald's, founded in 1955 by Ray Kroc, reportedly has had a grilling relationship with Japan since its debut in 1971. According to the Times, when faced with accusations that hamburgers were inimical to the country's diet, Den Fujita, the first McDonald's Japan president, declared, quote, "The reason Japanese people are so short and have yellow skin is because they've eaten nothing but fish and rice for 2,000 years. If we eat McDonald's hamburgers and potatoes for 1,000 years, we will become taller, our skin will become white, and our hair will be blonde." Okay, somebody needs to send this guy a copy of the film Super Size Me. I don't think you can eat the McDonald's food for 1,000 years because all your people will die. Now, I don't like reporting on this because there's people out there with leukemia, but apparently in China there's a new possible now leukemia cure. Now, this was sent in by White Ops. Now, I also got sent another story talking about vitamin B17 and how that's been very, very useful in curing cancer, apparently. Apparently, World Without Cancer has got this big thing on vitamin B17 and so on and so forth. Do a quick search for World Without Cancer or vitamin B17 on Google, you'll find it. And the problem is that when you start talking about this kind of stuff, it's very, very emotionally charged. There's a lot of people out there who know someone or everybody knows somebody or has had a loss from cancer in their family. So when you start saying that this is a cure, you're playing with some really powerful emotions here, and I can't really confirm that. So, I mean, that's something you might want to look at. But as well, this is a new story here where in leukemia in China, they have a possible cure. But of course, they always say, oh, we got a cure. No, you don't. You have a possible cure. China has developed its own typing regent of hematopoietic stem cell, which could, big could here, used to cure leukemia, according to the sources of the Chinese Academy of Military Medical Sciences. Interesting it comes out of that particular outfit. The homemade HLA-DRB1 type reagent is cheaper than the imported reagent. It's kind of easier and quicker in use, says Wang Xinghai, head of key laboratory biological genetic chips under the academy, who has led the team of this research for 5 years. Okay, this is also being taken out of a Chinese paper, so it's a little bit of Ringrish. This new type of reagent can be used to test all the 13 discovered genetic types of HLDRB1, covering all the 18 known serological types, according to Wang. Who wants Wang? Transportation of the hematopoietic stem cell is the first effective treatment of leukemia. Bone marrow donors have to go through HLA genetic typing to find a matchable leukemia patient, he said. The reagent is also applicable in organ transplantation, forensic medicine, and HLA-related studies. Wang revealed, noting that it breaks the monopoly of foreign bone marrow and organic transplant typing regions in China. The reagent has been approved by the State Food and Drug Administration this month and will soon be put into production by the Shenzhen-based company, he said. Now, you got to bear in mind that China, you know, they really don't give too much of a crap of what they do to their people over there because they got so goddamn many of them. So, you know, but this is yet another thing that now, as well, a lot of the news I see coming out of China is really, you know, blurb like, oh, yeah, we did this. Not a lot of backup info here. So you got to be careful that a lot of these news blurbs may not just be, you know, hideous amounts of propaganda. But that said, you know, I mean, this is what they're doing and this is what stem cell research gives you. Now, on to P2P News, sent in by Nomad Nightfall Gemini. A few days ago, the RIAA confirmed that as a series of legal cease and desist warnings to 7 companies, but didn't specify their names. So the RIAA is on the hunt again. It didn't take long before the first results showed up. WinMX, one of the most popular file sharing networks, has closed down. Front Code Technology site, the company in charge of WinMX application, is also unavailable. Kevin Hearn, Frontcone's technology president, was nowhere to be found. It seems that he didn't return any of the phone calls and messages in weeks. Another company targeted by the RIAA, eDonkey, has closed the New York office, and none of the top management representatives could be contacted for statements. BearShare and LimeWire, two more operating file share networks, are believed to be included in the RIAA's list as well. Their officials declined any comments. Wow. These guys are just bullying everyone. The RIAA considers that any file sharing network has to reconsider its position after both Grokster and Kazaa have lost their lawsuits they were involved in. Wow. You know, you got to look at this and go, holy crap. There are companies operating such networks have two options. install filters that prevent sharing that infringe on copyright or shut down their entire operation. Do this or die. Interesting that the core politicals, good to see that, you know, we've got companies policing their own. Isn't it nice to see that they can just, you know, you can have basically extortion running rampant with the RIAA. Nothing like Mr. G. Lichtman out there kicking ass and taking names. What a sick state of affairs, I gotta tell you. More and more things are going after now every single day. And it seems that, you know, with stories like this RIAA thing, what leads us straight into this Arcology story, which is so after now, it's not even funny. Cho Sung-yoon and his wife live on the 27th floor of a Samsung apartment complex here in, I guess this would be, where is this? Is this in Korea? I think it is South Korea. Their food is on a Samsung electric range. They call each other on Samsung cell phones and check their email on a Samsung home computer. Recently, they used their Samsung credit cards to get a 30% discount at a water park at Samsung Everland, South Korea's largest amusement park. If the couple had a serious mishap, they would have to be they would have been covered. Their insurance company? Who else but Samsung? Samsung is now one of the world's most recognized brands of electronic goods, and South Koreans regard it as a source of national pride. There should be more companies like it, says 44-year-old Cho, who works at a marketing business. But Samsung is so pervasive and its influence so immense in South Korea society that many here say it's turned a nation into a giant company town. They call it the Republic of Samsung. Isn't that interesting? They're too big, Cho's wife complains. Like America's Rockefellers, Morgans, and Vanderbilts of a century ago, the family that controls Samsung is contending with the populace increasingly wary of corporations' vast wealth and power. Many South Koreans are troubled by what they view as Samsung's corporate arrogance and tentacle-like reach in society. With the biggest life insurance, brokerage, and credit card operations in the nation, Samsung has personal data on millions of South Koreans, which makes some citizens nervous. Small businesses complain that, like Walmart, Samsung demands too much from contractors who make goods and sell them under the firm's name. Samsung Group's reclusive chairman, a 58-year-old Lee Kun-hee, South Korea's richest man with an estimated fortune of $4 billion, has come under fire, accused of running the corporation like a feudal lord. Civic groups compromising scores of lawyers, professionals, accountants have mobilized and filed lawsuits to push Samsung to operate more transparently and give minority shareholders a greater say in the company's affairs. Now, this could be viewed one of two ways. I mean, the guy did do this on his own. You know, he's legally, I mean, why should everyone have a say in this if the guy set it up, right? Legally, I don't think they're going to be able to go too far. It's going to cost them a lot of money to try to beat this down. But realistically, this is what corporations do. They set up a warlord state, and he's now the new feudal lord. Government officials called for an investigation of Samsung's campaign activities after revelations in July that company representatives paid more than $10 million in bribes to candidates in South Korea's 1997 presidential elections. Well, bribes happen everywhere every day, but that is illegal, without a doubt. The scandal led to the resignation of South Korea's ambassador to the United States, Hong Seok-hyun, Lee's brother-in-law and former newspaper publisher, who is said to have delivered bags of cash personally to at least one of the candidates. Oh, that's nasty. Samsung's growth is out of control, says Kim Sang-jo, a Hansang University professor turned anti-Samsung activist. That's interesting that he's labeled himself as an anti-corporation. I'm against this specific corporation. It's not only concentration of economic power, but political and social power that can deteriorate democracy of Korean society. Very interesting. Says Kim Jae-hong, a member of the National Assembly, this will be a great lesson not only for Samsung, but for all conglomerates not to commit such acts again. Samsung has apologized to the public for causing social confusion, quote-unquote, but it has not admitted to wrongdoing. Its spokesperson declined to request to interview Lee and other senior company executives. Samsung's officials point to independent surveys suggesting that South Korean public opinion supports them. And so far, it hasn't hurt Samsung sales. Well, this is an interesting sort of case in point here. What we got, let's look at this. Let's try to look at this fairly objectively here. What do we got here is we got a guy, right, who started a company, okay? And he got the money together and all the rest of it. He starts a company. The company grows and grows and grows and grows and grows and grows, and grows, and grows, and grows until finally it's this massive corporation. Now, he's the chairman of the board, so to speak. Now, you would wonder, let's just assume now that these companies all are upset because, you know, well, the minority shareholders want a greater say in all the rest of it. So what would happen, I'm not up on my economics, But let's pretend for a moment that a proprietorship were to get to this size, where the guy it's not a publicly owned company, where the guy's like, no, I'm in charge, and I'm growing the company. The company gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. You don't go public with the company. You keep it all on one guy, so it's a proprietorship, right? And he just keeps it growing. Well, you know, can anyone just walk in there and say, well, we want to have more say in what goes on in your company? Well, why should you have any say about what goes on? Well, it's not fair. Well, fair is largely a human concept. I mean, it's not fair that wolves eat the sick and the old. You know, so fair, you know, can't really come at me with fair. I mean, other than the fact we have a war of ideals where people go, well, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it goes and we get into that whole political spectrum there. You see, so I wonder sometimes how much of, like, what is Samsung doing that is bad? You see what I'm saying? Is it because they're providing massive influence? Well, everybody has massive influence. All these Rockefellers and Bilderberg group types, they all have massive influence. Can this be changed? Is there another method of control? Is there some other way that we could control this kind of money? Or is this just an example of people with no money whining because they want a chance to get more money and break down other people with power, you know, all that kind of stuff? It's an interesting sort of dilemma when you look at this and go, okay, well, clearly Samsung's got too much power. That's not the question here. Yeah, they've got hideous power, without a doubt, in South Korea. I mean, they're calling it the Republic of Samsung. Holy crap. But what's the alternative? What's the other way of doing this? People go, well, you know, they'll come to you with all sorts of interesting sort of models, which don't work because they've never worked in the past, and human nature seems to go against the concept of communism. A lot of clever people in the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union fell apart. Sorry about that. Now, that said, though, you've got China, where I'm not too sure I'd want to live because it's a little bit scary over there, who are communist. They're a communist nation, right? And they're, without a doubt, huge, and they rule with an iron fist. So you got to look at that. You can either have a choice between freedom, which it seems that, well, South Korea has with Samsung, or you can have communist control. These are the two extremes. And people say, well, there's got to be some middle ground there. Why does there have to be middle ground? You see, if there's middle ground is only the travel between the two extremes. So it seems to me that, you know, we need to figure out what exactly, maybe there's a whole other option we haven't looked at rather than these two. Like, I don't know. I'm a big fan of the whole Heinlein type society. But when you look at this thing here, I guess what's going on is we're not really upset with the structure of the company. People are just upset with what the direction of the company would be. Like, where are they eventually going to go? What do they believe in? Let's say Samsung decided to go hardcore Greenpeace. Let's say Samsung, the guy, you know, the chairman of the board there decided, you know, he found Jesus or something, and he's going to decide to go and, you know, save the world. Would everybody be upset with Samsung? No. No. And idyllically, if they got that much cash, anybody could create just a massive public relations campaign to make themselves look like heroes. This is all just social engineering, and we must be aware of that. Now, speaking of China, let's look at some Chinese web news sent in by Astrofix. China, of course, you've probably already heard of this, is imposing new regulations to control content on its news websites. The government said Sunday, another step in an ongoing effort to police a rapidly expanding internet population. Isn't that creative? We wouldn't want people knowing the truth about what's going on. Now, you got to check out the wording in this particular story because this is hilarious. The rules issued by the Ministry of Information Industry, wow, and the State Council, China's cabinet will, quote, standardize the management of news and information, end quote, in the country. The official Xinhua news agency said they take effect immediately, it said. The report did not give any details on the regulation, but said sites should only post news on current events and politics. It did not define what would be acceptable under those categories. Good, 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 good. Only healthy and civilized news and information that is beneficial to the improvement of the quality of the nation, beneficial to its economic development and conductive social progress, end quote, will be allowed. So no more bitching, no more complaining about what's going on in the world, no more, you know, calling down the government, none of that, you know. It's either you're sending out rah, rah, rah news stories or you're fucked. This is what communism is, okay? It added, the sites are prohibited from spreading news or information that goes against state security and public interest. How fucking vague is that? Public interest. I mean, when you look at this, okay, people who come to me and talk about communism, I would point at, number one, the Soviet Union, and how it totally fucking dissolved and turned to shit right off the top. Okay, total stifling of innovation. Nobody's free. And right now, Russia is the most corrupt nation on earth. Okay, like you can't. What can't you buy in Russia? You got money, go to Russia. You can get whatever your little sick and twisted fucking brain desires. Whatever you want, go there. It's the new one of the largest child porn capitals of the world. It's one of the largest areas for drugs. I mean, it's frightening the amount of shit that's going on in Russia, and that's all from this dissolution of the communist state. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with China, but maybe like China should, if they don't keep control of their populace, and as this keeps going and people keep getting repressed, eventually they're going to lash back. Okay? It added, also, the sites are prohibited from, you know... I can't even understand what is public interest anyway. I would state that my show here, Newsreel, that's public interest. China's population of internet users has surpassed 100 million as the world's second largest after the United States, which has 135 million. So very quickly, China is taking over the web. While the communist government encourages internet use for education and business, it also keeps an extremely tight rein over online content, usually blocking material it deems subversive, or pornographic. So bad. You know, subversive pornographic is another way of saying bad. Online dissidents who post essays questioning government actions and policies, or those who express their opinions in chat rooms, are regularly arrested and charged under vaguely worded state security laws. This is what communism gives you. Earlier this month, a French media watchdog group said an email account information provided by internet powerhouse Yahoo Incorporated helped lead to the conviction of a 10-year prison sentence of a Chinese journalist who had written about media restrictions in an email. Okay, so Yahoo fucked over a journalist for 10 years in a Chinese prison. Isn't that pleasant? Also part of an ongoing effort to curb potential dissidents, thousands of cyber cafes, the main entry to the web for many Chinese unable to afford computer or internet access, have also been closed. So, you know, anyone who wants to talk to me about communism needs to take a real good look at the history books and take a look at what's currently going on with China. And I would put it to you that, yeah, okay, I would probably want to have free people in space. I'm not too sure I'd want to have, you know, communist people in space. But I suppose we'll see, you know, a Darwinian logic will come forward and we will have will the American, you know, total core political mindset take it, or will it be China? You know, it's an exciting time to watch. I kind of get the feeling that we're fucked either way, though, unless we get some other option. Now, in child accessory news, also sent in by Astrofix, this shit here just totally infuriates me. This completely makes me so far beyond, the dissolution of the family unit has gone so far. Now, I don't have kids myself. Don't get me wrong. I think kids are important because without them, well, the whole culture dies. But, you know, if you're going to have a child, that's it. There is no, you know, other lifestyle. You know, you can't dedicate all your time to, your career and be a mom. That's not going to work. Those are both kind of mutually exclusive there. And people say, that's not true. No, dude, if you want to produce, we can raise a sociopathic culture. Don't get me wrong. We'll just go and send all our kids off to daycare centers where the children realize they have no grounding or connection. And therefore, they learn how to be selfish very, very early as a matter of a survival skill. And gradually reproduce a sociopathic nation, which is, you know, where we're going right now. But anyway, let me get through this story here. Women are increasingly seeking IVF, in vitro fertilization, treatments because they do not have the time. They don't have the time or inclination for a sex life and want to, quote-unquote, diarize their busy lives. Holy shit. Wealthy career women in their 30s and early 40s, some of whom have given up regular sex altogether, are turning to medicinalized conception, despite being fertile and long before they have exhausted the possibility of natural conception. They are prepared to pay thousands of British pounds, or, you know, thousands of dollars, for private IVF treatments, even though they have unpleasant and potentially harmful side effects, because they believe it offers them the best chance for instant pregnancy. many fertility experts believe that IVF offers women the best chance of pregnancy. 1 in 3 chance of success is better than one cycle if the woman is under 35, whereas natural conception has no better than a 1 in 4 chance for a woman at the same age, even if the couple has an active sex life. An active sex life aimed at pregnancy is considered to be unprotected sex at least once every 3 days. Holy crap. Each year, about 43,000 women receive in vitro fertilization treatments, most of them privately, and the cost of a single treatment, often several are needed, is at least £2,500. So that's like $5,000. Over $5,000. Government guidelines on when women should receive treatment on the NHS says IVF should be given only to those aged between 23 and 39 who have identified cause of the fertility problem or who have suffered unexplained fertility problems for at least 3 years. Michael Dooley, a gynecologist, obstetrician, and fertility expert, says in the past 5 years he has seen a 20% increase in the number of patients seeking inappropriate or premature IVF treatment. Now, some people would say, Sean, what's the problem here, dude? I mean, you know, it's their body. They can do what they want. Ah, yes, yes. Now, if these people were changing themselves to look like a tiger or getting plastic surgery to give themselves a rooster's, you know, cone on their head or something, I'd be like, fill your boots, you crazy bitch. But what they're doing is they're creating human beings, okay, with no family. All right, now that's... This kind of goes against the way the natural human organism is designed. Now, granted, it should say, well, Sean, maybe that's just the evolution of humanity. Yeah, maybe it is, but maybe it's not. Now, do you want to start fucking around with human lives like this? This is a little bit weird for me, okay? Kids have a hard enough go in this technology in our society right now. They hit the ground, and before they're 10 years old, they're immersed in more tech than people just 20 years ago even had access to. So when you look at that, you would think that the child should probably have the best chance coming out of the gate as possible. So I believe in families. I think they're important. And I think, I don't know if it's same-sex parents or whatever, but they need to have some sort of parental control. And if the broad doesn't have time to have sex, how the hell is she going to have time for a family? A child is a child. It is not a fucking accessory. I don't understand this at all. And I think that people who do this are just, you know, the absolute model of selfishness. Now, on to some core political news sent in by Doobie X. Google, now this is interesting, is planning a partner forum for about 400 people, including bloggers and journalists from major media outlets, and is prohibiting participants from writing about it, according to a search engine industry net expert. Now, first of all, who the fuck are you to tell me what I can and cannot talk about? Thank you very much. Okay, I can talk about whatever I want. Thanks. Dubbed Zeitgeist 05, the Google Partner Forum, the event is the first customer innovation conference Google said it has ever held, wrote Danny Sullivan in a Search Engine Watch blog form from Friday. The event is scheduled for October 25th to 27th at Google's Mountain View, California headquarters, Sullivan said. The link to Google's posting about the events now requires a username and password for access. Interesting. This could also just be a very clever way of talking about this forum so people watch it, but I don't know. It does seem to be fairly covert. In his blog, Sullivan cited the following passage in which he said is the frequently asked question section about the event website. All speeches and discussions at Zeitgeist are off the record to ensure that our presenters and attendees can speak openly. No press coverage or blogging is permitted. On one hand, I can say, okay, I can understand why they want everything to be off the record, so it's totally anonymous, right? But you can't control what people say. You can't do that. They go in, they hear something, they want to come out and talk about it. You can't tell them they can't do that because, well, that's wrong. Sorry, I'm not going to adhere to those laws. I think those laws are totally immoral. That's fucked. I should be able to talk about whatever I want. This is what free speech is all about. Speakers on the agenda, Sullivan wrote, include Google's co-founder, Sergey Brin, and Larry Page, Chief Executive Eric Schmidt, Yahoo Chief Executive Terry Semel, MSM Senior Vice President Yusuf Mende, and a bunch of other dudes who are all on there. Members of the press invited are Arthur Sulzberger, Chairman and Publisher of the New York Times, James Fallows of the Atlantic Monthly, and the New Yorker staff writer Malcolm Gladwell. So we got some heavy hitters going to this conference. Now, I think it's kind of funny that they think that these journalists and writers are going to be able to be shut up. You know, I think that's mildly hilarious that they think they're going to take these guys in, talk about a bunch of stuff, and none of them are going to talk about it on the outside. Mind you, it happens at the Bilderberg Group all the time. They've got, you know, the New York Times staff and all that go to the Bilderberg Group meetings, and do they talk about it? No. Why? Well, because it's secret. You know, the general populace isn't cleared to know what's going on at these meetings. You know, it's all behind closed doors. It's private, right? Oh, I see. They want privacy. That's what they want. These Google guys want privacy. Oh, well, in that case, if they want privacy, well, I think everyone has to have privacy. So if Google can say you can't talk about stuff and they're allowed privacy, I think maybe we should use that as an angle for ourselves to get some privacy, don't you think? Now, in propaganda news sent in by Agent Subversion, this is an interesting piece of intel that came down the pipe. I bet you didn't know about this, that the Saudi prince, Al-Wahid bin Talal, great name, buddy, has purchased 5.46% of the Fox Corporation. Wow. According to the Gulf Daily News, raising concerns that the conservative Fox News may soften its anti-terror stance due to the views of the new shareholder. Interesting to watch. It'll be interesting. It's a shame I don't watch Fox News because I'd rather gouge out my eyes with a spork. But, you know, it'd be interesting to see if Fox does, in fact, soften its stance now that, you know, the Saudis are putting huge money in it. Al-Wahid is the nephew of the late Saudi King Fahd, and was in the news when he visited the World Trade Center remains after September 11th attacks and offered the New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani $10 million check for relief efforts. And Rudy Giuliani told him to stuff the check up his ass, if I remember it correctly. Rudy was like, fuck you and your $10 million. Al-Wahid then released a statement blaming U.S. foreign policy for support for Israel and support for Israel for the attacks. Good, 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 good. Giuliani returned the prince's check with a statement that there is no moral equivalent for this attack. The people who did it lost any right for justification when they were slaughtered. Innocent people, not only are those statements wrong, they're part of the problem. This is what Rudy said. And then he went on to say, why don't you stuff your check up your ass? Well, I'm sure he probably not in writing, but I'm pretty certain that was on his mind. And even if you were to ask Rudy off the record that, I'm pretty sure he was like, yeah, I wanted to tell him to shove it up his ass. That's kind of a New York thing to do. In navigation news, now this is kind of exciting for any of us out there wanting to get into the geocaching thing. The first modernized global positioning system satellite featuring additional navigational signals to benefit military and civilian users around the world will be launched Wednesday night aboard a Boeing Delta II rocket. Interesting. Liftoff from Pad 17A at the Cape Canaveral Spaceport is scheduled for 11:53 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I think that's what EDT, yeah. The opening of a 28-minute window that extends past midnight to the 12:21 EDT. Oh, that's the window that they can get up there. The Lockheed Martin-built GPS 2RM1 spacecraft has spent several months undergoing launch testing and preparations at the Cape, twice as long as originally envisioned. Concerns about the internal components on the satellite and delays building range safety batteries and the Delta booter postponed the mission from May. So finally, after being postponed back in May, this new rocket's going up. The early weather forecast is calling for a 40% chance of clouds with rain interfering with Wednesday's launch attempt. So there's a good chance that'll get canceled as well. It will take just over 24 minutes for the three-stage Delta II vehicle to propel the $75 million payload. Good God. Into a highly elliptical transfer orbit looping from 150 miles at its closest point from Earth to nearly 11,000 miles at its farthest. From there, the spacecraft will use its onboard kick motor to reach the GPS constellation by raising the low point of the circularized orbit and increase the orbit inclination to 55 degrees and above and below the equator. The Spaceborne Network features 24 primary and several backup satellites flying in six orbital groupings. The Air Force continues to launch new satellites as replacements to keep the critical navigation system in good health. There are 28 functioning GPS satellites today, according to the military. Isn't that cool? 28 functioning GPS satellites. I did not know that. But now with this new standard that's going out there, GPS 2, apparently it will get bigger, better, stronger, and faster. But we will soon see what the truth in all that is. And in keeping in space war news, by the end of September, a Russian Cosmos 3 missile will be launched from Plastek Cosmodrome, 800 kilometers north of Moscow, carrying two Iranian satellites into orbit. Oh boy, bet you didn't know about this. Although the satellites are claimed to be for meteorological and experimental purposes is pretty fucking big, experts believe that one of them will possess surveillance capabilities, allowing it to observe American and Israel facilities throughout the Middle East. More importantly, experts believe the Iranian space program serves as a cover for developing more advanced long-range missiles capable of carrying nuclear warheads. Besides its nuclear ambition and the discovery of its purchase of long-range cruise missiles from the Ukraine, this is all from Iran, recent reports indicate that Iran might be only a few days away from launching a spy satellite into orbit, which you can bank. This is why, you know, the U.S. has been like, yeah, we're going to be putting up satellites that eat other fucking satellites. The Iranian Ministry's space program was revealed to the world back in 1988 when the Iranian Minister of Defense claimed that the next Iranian missile, known as the Sihab-4, would have the ability to launch payloads into orbit. Since then, some intelligence sources have speculated that Iran might have abandoned the Sihab-4 development in favor of more advanced Sihab-5 launch vehicle. But be that as it may, the Iranian inspiration to launch their own satellite into orbit continued to motivate in the following years. Although Iran has a relatively advanced military research development program of its own, it still falls short of the technological level required for an independent space program. As in the case of its nuclear and long-range missile programs, Iran turned to countries who assisted her in developing its military capability in the past, including Russia, China, and North Korea. Great! So, Russia, China, and North Korea. Now, these countries here, this is all part of the next big, you know, sort of alliance that's going to be in the next big war. Now, there's another thing going with this as well. So then we have India and the United States and everyone else kind of, you know, with Britain and everybody. These are going to be the battle lines for the next huge, we're talking trench-level warfare here. These countries are currently involved at different levels in the Iranian space program and are in particular in the development of a booster, which could probably be a derivative of the Sahib ballistic missile. However, that's speculation. However, the current launch plan for late September 2005 will not be performed using the native Iranian launcher, but rather a Russian Cosmos 3 launch vehicle. Great. The Iranian satellite to be launched is called the Mezbah, which literally means lantern, has been in the works for the last 8 years and reached maturity after collaborations between Iranian and Italian engineers. Italy has chimed in. The Italian company, Carlo Gavazzi Space, who assisted in the Iranian space effort to develop the Mezbah, also contributed extensive knowledge to its partner, and as a result, Iranian officials have been quoted as being optimistic regarding their ability to independently launch more advanced satellites in the next several years. Well, you'd think that Italy would have had enough of siding with the bad guys in, you know, the grand scheme of things, but, you know, I guess it's all part of the Darwinian space war we have emerging right now. Now, it seems that Canada has chimed in to go in and along with India and the United States. In nuclear news, Canada said Monday that it's resuming a nuclear cooperation with India after a strict 7-year moratorium. So after 7 years, we're back on the nuke trail. Foreign Affairs Minister Pierre Pettigrew said Ottawa is changing its policy and is now ready to supply India with dual-use technology that could be used in Indian civilian nuclear facilities. Dual use, eh? What's the other use? Canada imposed the moratorium in 1998 when India tested nuclear weapons and political rival Pakistan quickly followed suit. Oh, good. So Pakistan is against India as well. Mr. Greg Pettigrew, who said Canada and India are exploring the possibility of a direct sales of nuclear products by Atomic Energy of Canada Limited. The announcement was made at a joint news conference with the Indian Foreign Affairs Minister K. Natwar Singh and follows by 2 months a similar move by the United States. Mr. Pettigrew says the dual use items that Canada will supply to India will be kept under strict international safeguards to make sure they are not used in India's military nuclear weapons program. Well, it'll be interesting to see how Canada does that, it being, you know, the big heavy hitter that it is. To be able to stop India from using this technology in its nuclear weapons program. But, you know, it's nice that you said that. You have no way to back that up or to enforce it. India has separated its military and civilian nuclear weapons programs, or its civilian and military nuclear weapons programs, and has put a civilian program under the International Atomic energy agency safeguards. He says, well, yeah, I don't know if that's all just paperwork or what, but nice try. Canada still hopes that India will ultimately rid itself of all nuclear weapons and sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, a senior Canadian official told reporters later. India's nuclear policy has been responsible, Mr. Singh said, noting that his government has promised it will never be the first, will never be the first to use nuclear warheads in an armed conflict. We'll never be first. But the minute somebody lets one go, well, then we're into the game. Interesting. Now, I don't know if you know this or not, but there's this big war going on over in Iraq and in the sandbox right now. And just the other day, over 300,000 protesters went to Washington and protested. That's the largest protest since Vietnam. They didn't want another Vietnam, but if this does not signify Iraq as and Afghanistan and all that, the sandbox wars, the desert wars as the next Vietnam, I don't know what it does. Now, invisible protest news. They say in the paper here, more than 100,000 protesters in Washington and thousands in London yesterday demonstrated against the U.S.-led war in Iraq. Prominent anti-war protester Cindy Sheehan, who camped outside the U.S. President George W. Bush Texas Holiday Ranch for weeks after her son was killed fighting in Iraq, said, "We need people's movement to end this war." Organizers of the Washington demonstration said 300,000 people had assembled, triple the expected 100,000, but Washington police refused to confirm this. Why would they refuse to confirm that? U.S. veterans group said the protests would devastate troop morale. Well, I don't know about that. I think a lot of those guys over there don't really want to be there. But a 22-year-old who fought in Iraq, medically discharged 4 months ago, disagreed. People joined the military to defend their country, not lies, says Adam Reuter. A car bomb killed 10 police and civilians in eastern Baghdad yesterday, and a bicycle bomb killed 3 civilians in Nahilla. So it goes on and on and on and on, and people are protesting. People do not want to be in the war that is over there, and so they are protesting. 300,000 people protest in Washington. It doesn't make the news at all. Nobody knows a goddamn thing about it. So, again, I ask you, do these protests actually do anything? Do they do a single thing? Clearly not. I think that this is just a method for us to try to deal with our guilt. Now, in pot news, interesting, battle over the legislation on cannabis continue in the UK and globally. In the UK, this has resulted in muddles over the reclassification of cannabis, marijuana, to a Class C. On the one hand, there has been apparent relaxation of the law towards medicinal use. But this has been coupled with police harassment and imprisonment of the medical user Colin Davis, who opened a cannabis cafe in Stockport. Certain companies seem to be fairly certain that one day we will see legislation that they want to be in on the act. Hemp Industries has estimated that cannabis hemp has many possible uses, including fibers for textiles, and analgesic and anti-nausea properties, and a highly nutritious seeds for eating. And there is, of course, the recreational value. Now, what they're saying here is that it seems that Bayer has chimed in, and they're trying to get into the market as well. While the introduction of cannabis-based medicines might bring benefits to many, if those medicines are controlled by pharmaceutical corporations, then cannabis, which can grow freely, will be used to bring profits to companies such as Bayer. And Bayer was the same company that made Zyklon B for the Nazis, by the way. And GW Pharma, who I don't know, but I can bank they're probably evil. Although the cannabinoids that GW uses are the CBD variety rather than the more commonly used THC variants, the GW has a policy of seeking patents on the varieties of cannabis that are used in medicine, and this might one day extend to THC. So we're going to patent the weed. Hilarious. This could mean that in event of the legalization of cannabis, home growing could be prevented by companies holding the patents on producing cannabinoids. Isn't that great? It could alternatively mean that the only production of non-intoxicating CBDs would be legalized, leaving THC smokers to still fall foul of the law. 10 to 30% of MS sufferers in the multiple sclerosis, that is, in the United Kingdom already smoke cannabis for relief of their pain. A non-corporate solution would simply be to legalize this practice and make cheap, high-quality cannabis more available. Hence, Amsterdam. Good idea much. Well, you know, last thing we want to do is actually be, you know, smart about this kind of stuff. But, you know, not to, you know, try to encourage that or anything. But, holy crap. When Bayer chimes in and starts buying up patents, you know that I guess you can kind of anticipate the direction that that's going to go. Now, speaking of getting high, in space elevator news, a private group has taken one small step toward the prospect of building a futuristic space elevator. This is often called a beanstalk. Liftport Group Incorporated of Bremerton, Washington, has successfully tested a robot climber, a novel piece of hardware that reeled itself up and down a lengthy ribbon dangling from a high-altitude balloon. The test run, conducted earlier this week, seen as a precursor for the experiment intended to flight-validate equipment and methods to construction a space elevator, This visionary concept would make use of an ultra-strong carbon nanotube composite ribbon stretching up to 62,000 miles from Earth into space. So we're going to be looking at a nanotube ribbon. If the space elevator would be anchored to an offshore sea platform near the equator in the Pacific Ocean, and the other end in space, the ribbon would be attached to a small counterweight. Mechanical lifters, robotic elevator cars, would move up and down the ribbon carrying such items as satellites, solar power systems, and eventually people into space. Now, that will be very inexpensive to do. Liftport's plan is to take this concept from research laboratory to commercial development. We are very pleased with the test, Michael Lane, president of Liftport Group, told Space.com. It worked really well. The assessment of the flight hardware took place Tuesday at an undisclosed location in eastern Washington. Due to the experimental nature of the equipment, actual whereabouts of the test flights can't be revealed, primarily due to safety reasons. If our 23-pound robot falls from the ribbon, we don't want spectators to be in the way as it makes a couple thousand dollar crater. Ooh, yeah, not so good. This week's testing involved a 12-foot, 4-meter diameter balloon, safety lines held by a number of teams to keep the balloon from floating away. The ribbon dangled from the balloon was made of a composite fiberglass while the robot lifter ran up and down the tether. This doesn't really sound all that interesting, but when you consider what the application, this could be just an attempt to draw more cash in. You know, this could be what it is, but it is definitely, you know, a beanstalk, and it's a beanstalk program, you know. The lifter is much smarter than our previous versions. This is our 18th version, so they've got 18 other versions of this thing, he said. With the Mark 7 robot named Sword Over Damocles, or Sword for short, the belt-driven robot is battery-powered, featuring two motors and expanded cargo area due to increased intelligence built into the device, he said. So very interesting to see what's going to be happening with beanstalk technology. This would be very inexpensive to do. It'd be nice if NASA could get on board with this kind of stuff. Now, getting back to the whole China war going on there. We all know that China and Russia are getting together, doing lots of good stuff there. Lots of alliances happening. Well, it seems that India and the United States are gradually, of course, India is buying more and more arms. They're the top arms buyer from the United States, right? Well, India and the United States will hold their biggest ever joint naval exercise later this month as they aim to build up cooperation to deal with piracy and terrorism. This is what they're saying. Piracy and terrorism. Not China. Piracy and terrorism. The 10-day exercise in the Arabian Sea started on September 25th will also focus coordination between naval aircraft, anti-submarine warfare, and other sea missions such as search and rescue operations. Because lots of terrorists have submarines. The joint exercise called Malabar is the 8th in a series between the two navies. It's the 8th joint exercise. With each exercise, the level of complexity is going up, said Indian Navy Rear Admiral D.K. Joshi. It is the first time that two dissimilar aircraft, F-18 Hornets from the U.S. state and the Sea Harriers from the Indian side, will be taking part. The U.S. Navy will send aircraft carrier the USS Nimitz, two Aegis-class destroyers, and a P-3C surveillance aircraft to take part in the exercise. The Indian side will dispatch an aircraft carrier, the aircraft carrier Virat, a Delhi-class guided missile destroyer, and a Shushimar submarine. Very interesting. This will be the first time that aircraft carriers from the two navies will participate in the Malabar series of exercises, the Defense Ministry statement said. Washington has held several joint military exercises with the Indian Defense Forces over the past 3 or 4 years. New Delhi has emerged as a key U.S. ally in its global campaign against terrorism. Terrorism. The myth of terrorism. You gotta love that. Now, this has got nothing to do with terrorism whatsoever. This is all about the China. Everybody's scared shitless of China, and that's why everybody wants to get in real tight with India so that India can take on China. And America will be like, oh yeah, we'll back you on this. But it remains to be seen. Today's Daily Hack is Hijack This, and special thanks to Wolf Inspector. Hijack This is a program used by experienced users in order to detect browser hijackers. It allows you to identify any sort of spyware and malware, as well as some Trojan horses and worms. This is achieved by scanning special zones of the registry, as well as the hard drive disks, the results being listed in a structured window. Another feature of Hijack This is the creation of a log file, which can be saved as a simple text file and opened by any text editor. Very, very cool program. Check it out. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry. I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. This is a free radio broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of 66 people for the month of September. And if you would like to help out with this daily news broadcast, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the donate tab. And thanks again to everyone and their assistance gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any other pertinent stories, especially anything regarding private military contractors, would like to learn about that and like to keep track of these guys, please email them to newsreel. That's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album by Colony 5 called Colonization. I'm going to leave you now with another clown love song that I'm going to throw out to the new McModel that showed up in Japan. This is from me to you, baby. So until tomorrow, that's what server said. End of line.
Yeah. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I mean, you got carried away in the moment. And I could forgive you. I could do that. I could do anything. I want it.
I could buy you a Lexus truck with a white leather interior. I could kill off some bears and dogs and shit just to make you a fur coat.
I could love you and treat you with class.
Yeah.
And have babies falling all out your ass. But thinking about
choke out that bitch ass. I'd rather chop and never stop because you fuck my homie. I'd rather cut that neck in half. I'd rather choke out that bitch ass. I'd rather chop and never stop because you fuck my homie.
I could take all the face paint off and get a real job working for your dad. I would rather take a 10-pound ass and stick every time I go out and wipe his nut on my pillow.
Oh, but I think I'd rather kill you.
Cause we parked all alone in this here dark anyway. Hey,
I'd rather cut that neck in half. I'd rather choke out that bitch ass. I'd rather chop and never stop because you fuck my homie. I'd rather cut that neck in half. I'd rather choke out that bitch ass. I'd rather chop and never stop because you fuck my homie.
I'm the one that killed your precious cat and stuffed him.
Choke out that bitch ass. I'd rather chop and never stop because you fuck my homie. I'd rather cut that neck in half. I'd rather choke out that bitch ass. I'd rather chop and never stop because you fuck my homie.
I could